That's right, Mark Schuster. The pink men don't quit, and neither do we. Welcome into another episode of Talking Flock, your Flamingo podcast. With me today, also not quitting, Grant Peters. How you doing, Grant?
I'm doing well, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing much better than I could have been.
Yeah.
At those last 20 minutes of that game gone differently. Before we jump into that, I was going to remind everybody, wherever you're listening to this, subscribe, follow, share. I mean, if you're so inclined, give us a rating and review, help all the other soccer nerds find us. We're going to dig into this game. It was a whole vibes and chaos weekend, as the Walking 90 guys would say. A couple of wild ones this weekend, and ours was was one of the more wild ones I can remember. Yeah. Before we get into that, though, a couple news items. Did you hear about San Diego Loyal?
I did.
Going to fold at the end of the season. I'm not sure why they announced it now. Why not wait till the end of the season? But, like,
yeah.
That's my championship team. My wife's family's from San Diego, so, like, we get there. I've been to a couple of Loyal games. It's a great club. It's a great organization. And yeah. MLS is just
they always seem to do it this way, though, don't they? Like, I remember when – they always seem to do it this way, though, don't they? Like, I remember when the Cleveland Browns became the Ravens. They announced that in the middle of the year, too. And it was just like, like, why would you, like, yeah, like, why? Because at this point, it's like, why show up, right? I mean, but they're in the playoffs.
Yeah. Who's going to buy tickets at this point? I mean, there will be some diehards who are season ticket holders who still want to come see them. But, like, and it's tough for the players, too. I mean, you know, and Dave Magnus pointed out that, you know, it's Nate Miller, again, the coach for Lansing and Knight when they folded, now is the coach of San Diego. So it's rough news. I mean, it's, but this is partly why USL wants to differentiate from MLS, right? That MLS keeps coming into these markets and pushing these teams out.
Yeah.
You know, which
I think that, you know, like we talked about this a few episodes back, is that, you know, in order to do that, then I think that the USL has to change a lot of the structure of club ownership and what the investment is going to mean and for people that want to come into the league and how and what the benefit is going to be to come into a league when there is such instability as there is right now. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I think, you know, I just feel terrible for the people out in San Diego that have put a lot of effort and time into this and have done a great job with everything, and it's just kind of like, well, thanks, see you later. So you know, and our friends, you know, the Luligans down in St. Louis, they experienced the same thing. They experienced the exact same thing. And
Austin's
very same thing. So I think the USL has to, like you said, they have to really consider, you know, what does this all mean?
So. Yep, 100%. Let's skip ahead and let's jump into our overall impressions of this match, because we got a lot to talk about. It was a wild one. It was a late night, first of all. So, you know, we knew all the other results going into this. We knew that regardless of the result, the most we could do in the table is jump from sixth to fifth.
Right.
And puts a little distance, and it wasn't a huge playoff implication match, really, at that point, given the other results. But a lot of us did stay up late to watch this, and I guess, what were your, I mean, other than wow, that was crazy, overall impressions of the performance and of the match?
Overall performance is, I think, I'm very, you know, I actually was talking about this earlier with someone. These are the types of games that come off to me as, even though you're only getting 1 point, it kind of feels like you're getting more than 1 point, because with everything you were kind of facing with, kind of like, you know, the roster being what it is right now, the refereeing being what it is,
and not just right now, but always and ever shall be,
and always what it is. Then, you know, going down 2 goals, battling the elements, battling the heat and all that kind of stuff, and then going down a man.
Yeah.
And then coming back and to tie it. Just tremendous fight by the boys. And, you know, you're just proud of them, you know, when they do something like this. And you just hope that this is something that they can take into Chattanooga and get rolling on, you know, on a streak here. And so overall, I'm happy. Yeah. Of course, you want 3 points when you play, you know, someone like, you know, like Fuego. But overall, I think that, you know, if you get a point after being down 2 goals with a man down, you're pretty happy about that.
You're pretty happy about those last 20 minutes. But, you want to concede fewer than 4 goals, ideally.
Yeah.
For the second consecutive week, that would be nice. We'll talk a little bit about that. But I think you're right, Grant. I think there are draws that feel like a loss and draws that feel like a win. And this one felt like a win. I mean, this not only just the point, we'll talk about the implications in the table. It is actually an important point to have in our hand right now. But absolutely. Like you say, you got 8 games left, and there would have been some heads hanging, you know, had this game ended the way we thought it was going to end. And that's hard to recover from, you know, even if you're a professional.
I think, you know, life being as serendipitous as it can be, mm-hmm. The fact that they have this comeback, which they can kind of rally behind, and then, you know, they're having, you know, the travel problems that they've been having there, you know, there and back and things like that. So it's those are the types of things where you can really bond as a unit and you almost come out more ahead. So I'm even more interested to see what happens on Saturday against, you know, the dreaded Sad Wolves. So.
right. If they can ever get to Chattanooga, if they ever get back home to Madison, they travel getting to Fresno and getting back from Fresno. This is that's the rough part of this. One of the rough parts of this league, and having this league be continent wide, travel is just always going to be an issue. I will. The other thing that jumped out to me, a couple other things, is that Chela Martinez and Aid Macias were both out. I assume injured. The guy normally texts to find out about injuries is often his quote unquote honeymoon in quote unquote England, living his best life. And therefore ignoring us not. Yeah. The thing is, like, if I texted Evan, like, on his honeymoon, he'd be like, oh, let me find out for you. So yeah. I didn't want to bother him. But
and it seemed like he was having a great time.
He got to the Southampton match, which is his club in England. So good for Evan. Glad you're having a great time. But anyway, we assume that Chelo's been out for some time. Yep. Aiden wouldn't – there's no reason he wouldn't make the trip unless he was a little bit injured. So – You look at that and you think, okay, you see Mauricio Cicero and Eric Connerty in that dual 6-8 role.
Yeah.
We saw Mauro do that in the international friendly. Didn't look great in that role. Frankly, didn't look great in that role Saturday night. You definitely missed Chela Martinez. We talked about that already. But him and Aiden both being out and guys that are in those roles doing their best, just not familiar with those roles. You'd notice that we only had 47% of possession.
Yeah.
We had less than 80% passing accuracy. And just the eye test, the midfield possession looked shaggy and shaky. It wasn't crisp. It wasn't.
Well, I think what you're seeing from that is by not having that possession in the midfield, the opposing teams are now employing a high press on our back line. And I think that as we've seen, the opposition is having a tremendous amount of success with it. And so,
And that's the other thing there's been this bit of a scouting report, and that Tormenta figured this out, and now Central Valley did too, that we do like to play high. Our backline does like to play high, and we don't have a lot of pace. Like our center backs, as good as they are, you wouldn't call any of them pacey, really.
No.
If you can come at them with some pace, if you can get a good through ball and pass them, and you can get them on their heels or running, you know, facing their own goal, like, you can have some joy back there. And that's Central Valley was able to exploit that. But that's really, as you point out, we're more vulnerable to that when we don't have that really solid number six.
Yeah.
We don't have that solid possession in the midfield. It's just more vulnerable.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it could be something just as simple as just a spacing issue is because, like, you know, not, you know, someone who just understands the spacing and is going to put themselves in the right position. It's just, and I think the thing that it's so shocking to see is because of how good the back line has been all year.
That's what's wild. That they were just the best back line in the league. And now they've conceded 8 goals in 2 matches.
Right.
That's, And that was one of the things that I mentioned in the midseason. We had a midseason roundtable. Consistency was like going to be our downfall if we have one. And this match was a sort of an encapsulation of the season, right? It was really good for a while, and then really bad for a while, and then really good for a while. Just a solid 90 minutes would be great.
It was kind of the same way as like the Tormenta match, where it's like, you know, we go up 2-1.
Yeah.
You know, and then we give up three straight. This time though,
but this time we had the fight to get back into it, which is great.
And this time we came back, which is great.
So let's talk through it, and we'll talk more about the officiating. That was like the other almost game deciding thing was the officiating, and we'll talk a bit about that some more. But the Central Valley get the fastest goal, as far as anybody can tell, the fastest goal against Ford Madison in history. Yeah. I asked Mitch Meerman, who knows everything, and he said probably, so I'll take his word for it.
They said on the broadcast too. So
yeah, well, it was the fastest goal for Central Valley's ever scored, but I think it's the fastest goal we've ever conceded too.
Oh yeah, I would assume so. Yeah,
I would. I can't remember one quicker than that, but 41 seconds. And this is just what we're talking about. We lose possession. We're in our attacking third, but we lose possession. And Razak Kramo picks it up just outside his own box. And you know that this and there was no there's no decision making process. He knew what he wanted to do immediately because I assume they had scouted this, right? So he just hammers the ball up the pitch from just outside his own box, and Jose Carrero Garcia is there, picks it up, and he's immediately in behind. But our guys are almost at the center stripe. And Burned came, I don't know what he was doing. He was way outside his own box. I think he might have done better to stay in the box and stay a little bit back. I can understand his desire to get aggressive there, but I don't know. It's easy to second guess. But 41 seconds in, it's 1-0. I mean, you guys, we talked about this last time. You can't be that high. You got to be a little quicker. But also at the same time, you're like, okay, it's Central Valley. You know they score a lot. You also know they concede a lot. It's really okay. Like I wasn't panicking at that point. Really.
No, I kind of like just shook my head. I was just like, you know, come on, guys, what the hell? And
my tweet was, what on earth?
Yeah, but I think I know. Like you, I knew that they would come back and get one or at least two. So
yeah, and it didn't take long to get that one. Like 4 minutes later, Jaden Onan, who we'll mention his name a lot tonight. He has been in such good form the past month and a half, really.
I would, absolutely.
But this actually is a pretty good build-up, too. Eric Connerty does a nice job holding up in the midfield, and then he gets it to Jaden, and it's a give-and-go right off of E12 training ground, you know? He gives it to Bartman, takes it off running. Bartman one-times it. These are like one-time passes, which I love to see. And Jaden, at that point, he's going downhill, right? He's full head of steam forward. Gebhardt makes a run kind of in behind. He draws a defender away. Cheney gets out to the wing to kind of spread the defense out a little bit. And by the time somebody decided to finally step up to Onan and try to close him down, I, honest to God, I cannot prove this, but 100% accurate, I said out loud in my living room, have one, Jaden. And he did. And he just hammered a laser from, I don't know, 26 yards or so into the upper 90. Just an incredible strike. Currently, as we record on Monday evening, it has 84% of the vote for goal of the week. I think there's no doubt.
I think he's going to win.
But that kind of response, and then you're back to level, right? You forget the goal that you gave up. We're back. We're level. It's fine. Everything's fine. And it's only 4 minutes into the match. Shake it off and move on. So, but man, did he have a night? Did he?
He's been, like you said, he's been good the last month and a half, and that's it's been great to see, because I think he's one of the, when he's good, he's one of the best players, not just on the pitch but in the league. He has a pace and he has ability that just you don't oftentimes get to see in this league. And so he's been just so good the last month and a half, to where he's really been driving a lot of the offense up front, which is great.
He has. He's involved in
almost most every goals. Yeah.
Like at some level, he's involved if he's not scoring. And to add that, just these past, I think, 4 weeks, was it 4 games ago that he scored his first one in Richmond? Yeah. To get three goals in that span. To add not only creating chances, but finishing chances, like he's just become a really, really dangerous player in the late part of the season here. He was involved in our second goal as well. Just about 10 minutes later, Christian Chaney gets the ball out to him on the wing, and he picks it up and puts it right back in to top of the box. And Omar Lemus goes to ground, takes Chaney out, and it's you know, we'll give the ref credit for a good call here,
yeah,
to give us the penalty. So it's a good build up.
Reset the sign now.
Yeah, right. Reset the goal. Reset the penalty counter clock. But this one we actually converted, and again, it's a good build up. It's Jaden Onan again involved, Christian Chaney again involved. And I don't know what Omar Lemus is thinking going to the ground there, but you know, there was no serious argument about whether that was a penalty or not. It was clearly
it was a penalty.
Yeah. Foul. And I want to take a moment to appreciate the penalty too, because Christian put it about as far to the left as you could and keep it off the post. And he needed to, because the keeper, Mitch North, guessed right.
He did.
Yeah. And almost got it. And he put enough pace on it, and he placed it just beautifully and perfectly, and then went over and celebrated with his family and friends over there, which was pretty awesome to see also.
Yeah. I mean, I texted him about it, and I was just like, dude, I mean, this is so great to see that, you know, you got to have these moments in front of your friends and family. And he texted back. He's like, oh, it's only about half, you know? And so, yeah. And so
it's not even all of them.
Yeah. But they, you know, that was great to see that, you know, they had the pink hometown hero shirts on.
Yeah. It was great.
With him doing his, you know, kind of like, it reminds me of the, you know, the Jim Palmer, jockey underwear pose. Where he's just kind of like late, you know, and so, so it was great to see that he got to go and have this. And they were, you know, they were talking to the Fresno guys the whole time too.
They were tripping.
I mean, if there was a game that I would have, I'm really missing that I didn't go out to, that's probably one, just because, like the vibes and chaos, you know. So,
So you're feeling good at that point. 15 minutes in this match is already 2-1.
Going great.
You feel like, okay, park the bus now. No, that's a joke. Don't do that. You know, it didn't take very long. This whole game, partly owing to the way Central Valley wants to play. They try to be fast paced, right? They try to score a lot, which doesn't always work for them very well. But in addition to the fact that our midfield was depleted by injury, just ended up being a really more open game than I expected it to be. It was kind of back and forth quite a bit. So it wasn't super shocking that Central Valley did get a second goal. We did clear this one twice, but it got to Muhammad Dabo about 30 yards out. Yep. And nobody stepped up to him. And this one, I kind of, looking at it again today, I kind of leave this on. I don't mean to be too hard on Mauro Sacchero, but he was kind of standing there in a pocket of space and marking nobody. Like he wasn't going to close down that space after Dabo had the ball. But when the ball is in the air being cleared and is floating out toward Dabo, you can step up and try to like at least close off that lane. But he didn't, and he wasn't sure. There's a couple times he wasn't sure where to be. There's like at least two occasions he was like running into our own players. Like he just, and again, he's doing his best. He's just not a role he's familiar with, and he doesn't.
Yeah, quite absolutely. Be there. Yeah.
You know, that's why I try not to be too hard on him. But in this one, Dabo was just there all by himself, and he pops the ball up into the box, just puts it on a dime right at the top of the 6-yard box, and Viljan Bijev just gets to the back of Timmy Mell and beats him to it and heads it in.
That BJ is pretty good, isn't he?
He's awfully good at soccer. Yeah. I mean, the thing was about Central Valley is they have some really talented, especially attacking players.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know? And it's you're not going to stop them all the time. You know, to me, maybe could have done a little better being a little bit more aware of where the ball was and where BJ was, but also, you know, you typically
have that ball was pretty damn good.
It was. So. Yeah. I mean, the ball in. You know, when you don't bother Muhammad Dabo and don't get in his face a little bit, he's going to put it on a dime, and he absolutely did. And what do you do? And then the third goal was kind of eerily similar. It's a free kick from the left side. Mm-hmm. There was some question about whether Central Valley were onside or not, and they were. They definitely were when the ball was taken. It looked like they were offside because they beat our guys so badly.
Our guys that kind of look like their controller just kind of, you know, the batteries went out and they just kind of like froze. And so,
yeah, totally. They ended up with two guys goal side, both Morris Otero and Sam Brotherton, who Brotherton had come in because Timmy Mel got hurt a little bit, which concerning. But they both just pulled up. Like you said, it looked like they just weren't aware of where the ball was or where their marks were. And they ended up with two guys goal side of our guys, which is insane. And it was pretty easy header from there for them to finish. And it's 3-2 at halftime. And you're going, what the hell just happened?
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, cause like we said, it's you're up 2-1 and you know, in Tormenta, we went into the halftime up 2-1 and this one, it was just like five goals in one half.
What do you do? I mean,
what are you going to do? You know?
Yeah.
That's just nuts. So
it's this game, it's this league, I honestly still felt like we were good enough. Like you could tell our midfield wasn't quite where it normally is, but we have enough talent. Christian Chaney, Jaden Onan, who are both playing out of their minds. Derek Gebhardt's been pretty quiet the last couple of matches, but you still feel like you got him. You got Stephen Payne. You got the talent to get one or maybe two more.
Zemo who's in form. So
Zemo had a good night also. Didn't get on the strat sheet a lot, but he looked really good and was dangerous. And he was mixing things up. So coming in the second half, you still feel like okay, right? If you're down 3-2. You're like, I don't know that we probably shouldn't have conceded those last two goals, but all right, let's get one more. And then the referee intervenes, and only 8 minutes into the second half. Okay, you tell me how on earth this is possibly even a foul.
I can't. I mean, because I didn't. No, I mean, it. If anything, I was more shocked that they called it a yellow.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like because there wasn't even a foul. So it's
no,
like,
it wasn't a foul, and therefore can't be a yellow, but there was no scoring opportunity.
Right. And so
it wasn't a professional foul. It wasn't a jersey pull.
I guess I watched it a couple of times, and you know, I can't place why Timmy got called for a foul. I mean there wasn't anything I saw that made me go, oh yeah, I could maybe see that. Like maybe he like tripped him.
Not even any
kind of like, you know.
Yeah. It's not even
anything that I saw that made me think, yeah, that's a foul. Not a foul.
I think the key for me is nobody had possession of the ball.
Right.
And in that situation, it's a 50-50 ball. Both players or all players in the vicinity have a right to the ball. That's clear in the laws of the game. So, and Jacob Kroll was looking up at the ball just like Kudus Lawal was, both just looking up, waiting for the ball to come down. And because they're jockeying for position, they do bump into each other. I was trying to look and see if Jacob gave him a push. I mean, Jacob's arms were a little bit away from him, but he did not. I can't say that he gave him a push at all. And I think Lawal fell down, but he kind of lost his footing more than anything.
Yeah.
And even if they go shoulder to shoulder, or they just like come together and one of them falls down, it's still, you have a right to the ball. You can take a position under a ball like that. You know, if Lawal had possession of the ball and Jacob bumps into him and he falls down, that's a foul. This is not the situation. And the referee points to the spot, gives him a yellow card. Jacob has to keep his head there and not, I mean, I don't, nobody, I had you, have you heard anything what he actually said to the referee? I have not.
No, I mean, but I mean, I think I agree. I agree with you that you've got to, I mean, is it a crap call? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But let your captain handle it.
Is it a terrible response from us? Absolutely. I mean, because we've been like, you brought it up earlier. We've had crap calls. We've had lots of crap calls, and you can't get yourself tossed out of a game. You just can't. And,
bullshit or not, the yellow card he got was total nonsense. But yeah, you know that you saw a yellow card, and you know that dissent will get you another one.
Yeah,
too much dissent or whatever it is we said. We'll try to find out exactly what it was said.
But you know, Jake's a passionate guy, and you know, obviously,
they are.
The heat of the moment. You know, it's just a mistake that he made, and you know, you learn from it, and you know, you just hope. I mean, and knowing Jake and knowing how intelligent of a player and how intelligent of a person he is, I probably think this is a one-time mistake. And so, but we're definitely going to miss him the next game.
For sure. But again, let your captain step in.
Yeah.
Might cool off. Let your bench get a yellow card, which they did, you know, whatever, but you gotta know you have a yellow card and you walk away.
I know, I believe it happened after the penalty. So,
this is what it sounded like. Yeah, it sounded like he must have said something.
After he scored, I think he said something.
As constructive. It wasn't constructive.
Baron was really close to saving that penalty.
I know. He went the right way.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty great.
Yeah, he was really close. So,
anyway, I wonder if the last game when we had two goals called off for offside, and I don't know anything. I haven't, like I said, the guy that normally provides us with this information is away for a couple of weeks, and they wouldn't tell us anyway. The league, for some reason, keeps discipline under wraps, which, like, okay, then that's not much of a deterrent if you're not telling people how they're getting punished. But there was a lot of tweet activity from the coaches and from players about those offside calls. There's been silence about this one, so I wonder if they did get a little talking to from the league.
I'm sure they did.
So, but it is our duty then to take up that mantle. USL League One, your referees suck.
Yeah, they're the worst.
I mean, that's a game-changing call. 3-2, 11 versus 11 is an entirely different game than 4-2 and we're down a man. Right. I mean, basically we were able to come back and get the draw, but like that is a potentially game deciding call.
Absolutely.
Almost 40 minutes left in the match.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is ridiculous. So so at this moment, we're down 4-2 with 40 minutes to go. And I got to tell you, I was despairing. I was like, we're not having a podcast this week. I can't do this anymore. This team is not
going to. I've been there before. Yeah.
I know. This felt like August last year when the wheels totally come off and you're just like throwing, you know, this. We're not going to make the playoffs. Everybody stop. Stop even thinking about it. Because we're just not going to be able to recover from these two consecutive 4-2 losses, and that no matter how hard we try, these guys are young, they're human, and maybe Matt just doesn't have what it takes to get them through a 30 game season, you know. I probably would have come around, I probably would have found optimism, but at that moment it was like we're done. This is it. The season's over. So, a pivotal moment in this match is Pierre Da Silva coming on for Morris Acero, and Robert Skrine came on as well. But
who also played really well.
He did. He really did. Yeah. He's come on as a terrific option defensively as a defensive substitution. But you know, we haven't seen enough of Pierre to really know. And we talked about that last week with Kelly, that we just haven't seen enough. He's done put in some good minutes, but like 15 minutes here and there. But to come in for the last like 25 minutes here and really, this is the first time he's really made an impression on a game, and what an impression it was. And you hope that he becomes now a really solid option to start maybe at that 6 or 8. I mean, I know he's still coming back from knee surgery, which is a big deal, and you don't want to push it. But man, did he look good. And it just seemed like just with him in that role. It just seemed like things got shored up a little bit, like he was just in a better position and was a bit more confident on the ball maybe than Mora was at that moment. But
one of the other things I noticed too is like I'm wondering if his the name on his jersey could be spaced apart any further than what it was.
It's like perfect. It was justified. Like,
it was like duh, Silva.
Is that a Brazilian thing? There's too many.
I don't spaces. Know. Is that, it's got to be. It's got to be completely like one is on the. They're on each shoulder. You know.
We will also mention that he got he had this great match and scored a goal and an assist on the very day that we dropped our interview with him, our first ever, it was his first ever appearance on this show. We dropped it Saturday night. And I mean, coincidence? I don't know. But he does get his goal, and this was amazing that it was actually, he actually started the play that led to the goal, because he got a ball in the middle of the pitch, gets it forward to Jaden. Yep. Jaden, of course, doing the Jaden thing, going, he's just going to go 1-on-4, because why not?
I'm going to run past all of you.
Yeah. Because
that's what he does.
But the hell of it is, he would have had they not fouled him.
You could, you know? And I actually said this at this point in the game. I was watching with Andrew and Zach and my friend Jonathan, and they were playing through Jaden.
Yeah. Like,
every time we got the ball, we were shifting it to the left side to get it to Jaden.
Yep.
And just let him work. And so those are the kind of the cool moments in soccer. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like when in the moments in basketball, when you have a guy who's just insanely hot and you just run the offense through him and you're just like letting him come down and just you're setting the screen because you know he's going to probably make it. But in soccer, that's really cool as well. When you get to see that the offense is just running through a player because he's just dominating the pitch. And he was good. Like, he was really, really good. And him and Chaney up front were just lethal as ever and showing what those two can do.
Yeah, really. So this play ends up with Jaden, like I said, going 1-on-4. Jordan Chavez slides and takes his feet out from under him, just as Stephen Payne was making a run in behind that would have been really dangerous. So we get a free kick just outside the box. And this was clearly something they worked on. Clearly in training, Pierre was the guy taking the free kicks. Bartman, Nazim runs over it. Chaney, who you expect to be taking it, takes a step toward it. And then Pierre stepped up and hammered it with his left foot right around the wall, one skip and in. Incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible. Chef's kiss. Beautiful, beautiful finish. Yep. And that all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, we got some life here.
I actually said, I actually stood up when he was lining it up and said to anybody that was listening in the room, if he makes this, we're going to get a point.
Yeah. Good call.
So
good call.
I just had a feeling, you could see the way I think, as you said, it changed when Pierre came in the game, and just the look of the team kind of changed, and the pace and the confidence of the team changed. So the right sub at the right time.
100%. And that goal, getting that goal, I think you weren't the only one who felt that way. If we get, now that we scored, we can get a point. Because the voice really started to pour on at that point and started really feeling it. We almost had a penalty. Like, we should have had a penalty. Like, Chaney got taken down in just inside the box, but the refs called it outside the box.
When I saw it live, I actually thought it was outside the box. And so I was surprised that they were going to check and see that they were.
It did. I thought so too, but upon like replay, it did kind of look like it was in the box. At least the defender was in the box. I don't know if that matters.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I think the offensive player has to be in the box.
That could be, yeah.
Yeah.
We had a Bartman had a huge chance in 73rd. Again, Onan involved. Mitch North has a big save. And then the big moment where in the 82nd minute, this is late in the match, there's a long ball forward from Mitch North, from the goalkeeper, which is intercepted by Mitch Osmond. And he gets it with his head basically all the way out to the center circle. Jaden, again, one times it back to De Silva. And he does basically what Central Valley did to us in the first minute. He just looks up and one times it up over the top and
hammered it. Yeah.
And to the skill involved in taking that ball back, didn't even settle it or anything, just one timed it with his left foot on a dime up over, you know, catching Chaney in stride.
Yep.
Assist of the week, no doubt, right? And Chaney then gets one on one with the keeper, and he actually kind of overran the ball a little bit, like the ball kind of died on him, so he ends up like right, it was head like right over the ball, which then to chip it over the goalkeeper in an awkward position is was really, really incredible. Like, and just such composure to finish that and to level the match. And of course it's going to be Chaney in Fresno.
Yep.
Leveling the match, saving the point.
He got to do his signature celly. So
yeah, again, and maybe saving the season. I don't know if that's hyperbole, but I tell you, you know,
I don't think so. I mean, I think everyone was feeling that kind of where you were when it was 4-2.
Yeah.
So, you know, to come back and get, you know, to get a goal, you know, and to get another one to possibly get a point. Yeah. You're feeling pretty good about that. So,
yeah. And you feel like you just going into these last eight games and go to Chattanooga.
Yep.
Just such a different mindset, such a different mentality. I know they're professionals. They're not us. Like there's one thing for us to have a certain mindset, but, I mean, it just would be so dispiriting to have this game basically taken away from you by the referees, to play kind of shaky defense and to come back and lose, basically have a really great season up to this point, drop two games in a row, and then drop a third.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know if they're coming back from that.
Yeah.
I would agree.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's the losses start to pile up and you just wonder, you know, how much of, you know, the previous seasons does that start to creep into the psyche. And as you heard on the episode that we did with John Pasquarella, the psyche in this game is so
important.
You know, it's so important. So
it's yes, but not only to get a draw, like if we just went and got a normal 1-1 draw, it, you know, maybe it's not as safe as moment, but to go down a man, come back a man down, score twice, and then defend. I mean, there was still almost 15 minutes left to defend.
Yep.
And they really had to. I mean, Central Valley kind of threw it all forward, and we did clamp it down and come away with a point, which is I don't know, just it's an incredible performance. Talk about grit and talk about resilience. I mean, that's what Matt talked about even in the preseason. He wants to bring in guys that have grit and that resilience. And you know, we got the talent, we got the skill. The talent fails you a little bit, and you give up some goals, but then you dig down, yep. You find that grit, and you come back and you get two goals. And
that's been something that he's talked about all year. Even in the off season, was that he wanted guys with grit. It's the reason why he went and got Chaney. It's because, you know, that's who Chaney is. And I think you probably saw that, you know, Chain was not going to let those guys leave that place with 0 points.
Yeah.
So, I think he had a 9.1 rating on FotMob.
Oh, really? I forgot to look.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Like he was in the blue, which is like, that's always where you want to be. Yeah. He was man of the match, I believe, within like a 9.1.
Wow.
So,
that's incredible. So let's go around the league real quick, and we'll talk about where we're headed next and the whole where we're at in the table. So on Wednesday, and we mentioned it was a wild weekend, folks. On Wednesday, Greenville at home win 2-1 over Chattanooga. Luis Coutinho opened the scoring for the Triumph, and then Jacob Labovitz doubled the lead in first half stoppage time. Siobhan Marsh got one back during also in first half stoppage time. But that was all the scoring, and that one, no goals in the second half. So the Triumph get 2-1 win there. Also Wednesday night, Tormenta and Northern Colorado draw at 2. Keziah Sterling had both goals for Tormenta, the opening goal coming 20 minutes in, and then answered by Golden Boot leader Trevor Amon just after the half-hour mark. And then Sterling put the host Tormenta back in the lead just before the break with a penalty. And it looked for all the world like Tormenta was going to take all 3 points here, but Marco Hernandez got the equalizer 3 minutes into stoppage time to salvage a point for Northern Colorado. Then on Saturday, Omaha gets their 6th consecutive win, 2-1 over Greenville. That ties the 2019 Lansing Ignite for the longest winning streak in league history. So I guess congratulations, Omaha. thanks to those goals from Joe Rito in the first half and Steven Dos Santos in the second on a free kick, which got deflected by the wall, then headed by an Omaha attacker into the crossbar, back to Dos Santos, and he taps in the rebound. It was kind of a crazy-looking play. Greenville did make it interesting with a Jacob Lavovitz goal just at the beginning of stoppage time, but they couldn't muster a second. Lexington, late drama in Lexington, as the Green Horses, as I'm calling them, the Green Steeds. I don't know what they're
– I like Green Steeds. That's nice.
Green Steeds get a 1-0 win over the Kickers. Alassane Ates Diouf draws a foul in the box and then steps up to convert the penalty in the 83rd minute. For that foul, Dakota Barnathan earned his 2nd yellow of the evening, and so he'll miss the Kickers match against Central Valley on Wednesday. Northern Colorado beats North Carolina 2-1. The Hailstorm gets their first win. This is the first win since July 22nd for the Northern Colorado Hailstorm. Trevor Amon gets his 18th goal 27 minutes into this one. Rather haphazard offside trap that didn't work, and he got in behind and scored. North Carolina responded with a header straight off a corner. Great out the head of David Garcia, but then Bruno Rendon gets the winner for Northern Colorado. A very nice finish. Knoxville and Charlotte played a 1-1 draw. More late drama here as the Jacks got one from Trezor Mbuyu in the 66th. But Danny Fernandez gets a point for one Knoxville with a 89th minute equalizer. And then the other 8-goal match on the evening is Chattanooga and Tormenta, 4-4. Pedro Fonseca gets a goal in the 13th minute for Tormenta. Red Wolves respond 5 minutes later with Papa Mensa on that one with a nice little chip. So it's feeling like the Madison match, right? Trading goals quickly. Tormenta takes the lead 3 minutes after that on a really wonderful solo effort from Keziah Sterling. Then it was 20 whole minutes without a goal. Before Nicholas Cordona leveled it just before halftime on a header directly from a corner. Siobhan Marsh with an even better solo effort, running all alone across the box and finishing for Chattanooga. Then Quelea Kelly for Tormenta, a nice through ball to get him behind, and then Tormenta scores again to take the 4-3 lead on a second goal from Fonseca, Pedro Fonseca. The Red Wolves were not done yet. 5 minutes into stoppage time, Papa Mensa gets equalizer on this really crazy-looking side scissor kind of thing to give Chattanooga the point. And so we had 2 consecutive 8-goal matches, which was, I don't know, it's a crazy weekend and a crazy
this league, I tell you.
Crazy league. So after all that, North Carolina remains on top, but with their loss to Northern Colorado and then Omaha winning over Greenville, there's only 1 point separating them now between first and second. So North Carolina is on top with 44 points, Omaha in second with 43. And so that 6-game winning streak for Omaha has them sitting pretty nice position right now. Northern Colorado and Charlotte both tied on 40 with 11 wins both each. So Northern Colorado has the edge on goal differential in third, and then Charlotte's in fourth. Madison now in fifth with 37 points and Greenville in sixth with 36. Now, the reason that draw, getting that draw was not only great for the mentality, for the momentum, et cetera, but that was a big point because without that point, we'd be in sixth place with 36 points, tied with Greenville, but behind on goal differential. And we'd only be 4 points clear of Tormenta in seventh. So Tormenta would still feel in striking distance. It would still feel very vulnerable to drop out of the top six. 5 points clear, and with the team behind us above the playoff line, feels much, much better at this point to me.
Absolutely.
Now, we've slipped to fifth in points per match, which is still okay. The games in hand have leveled out. We still have a game in hand on Charlotte, But this is the wild part. North Carolina, on top of the league, has a game in hand on us and just about everybody else at the top of the table. That's just bonkers to me. So looking ahead, we have 8 matches left. Third consecutive away match at Chattanooga Saturday. Again, bottom of the table team that we should beat, that we probably will have a really hard time doing so.
Agreed.
Then we have 3 straight at home, which is this is where we have to make our money right here. These 3 matches: Knoxville on September 9th, Richmond on Thursday, September 14th, Northern Colorado Wednesday the 20th. The only difficult turnaround then is you have the home game Wednesday the 20th, and you're away at Charlotte on Saturday the 23rd, and back home to Lexington September 30th, away at Northern Colorado October 7th. We finish the regular season, huge match against Omaha on October 14th to finish it out. I feel like we need 16 to 18 points out of those last 8 games. I feel like 52-ish is where it gets you in the playoffs. If we want to host a game, we're going to need to be closer to 58 or 60. So at 36 right now. So I don't know. What do you, can we do it?
I think we can. I mean, I think it's a combination of factors of getting the team healthy. I mean, because as we've mentioned, there's some injuries that I think that they're dealing with. And it's getting everybody healthy, but it's getting everybody kind of locked in and playing at a high level at the right point. Like we were getting there a few games ago, and then you hit the skids. And so now you got to kind of reevaluate some things and, you know, go back to the board and fix it. And but as they've shown, like all season long, when they've had periods of, of trials and tribulations that you go through in the season, they've come out pretty well. You know, and they've answered the bell, and come out swinging, and usually come out better for it. So you just hope that like there's not too many of them in the course of a year, where eventually it just
And you come through a tough stretch here where you have a couple losses and a draw. It could have been a loss, and you're still talking about maybe hosting a playoff game. Yeah. So you're still feeling like, okay, guys, just hang on, push through it. But like you say, we got to get everybody healthy. Part of this skid has been injuries, right? We've been missing some key players. We're going to be missing a key player in Jacob Kroll on Saturday. Yeah. I would expect Sam Retherton to start in the middle, and which will probably push Mitch Oshman over to the left, and I'd see Timmy Mell on the right. So, and last time we did that, when Osmond was a little bit injured, when Brotherton was in the middle, he did fine. So, it's not a steep drop off from Jacob Kroll to Sam Brotherton.
I'm interested to see if they give, the aforementioned Robert Display, Robert Screen, a run here. He's looked really good in every game he's come in the last, again, in probably like the last 2-3 games he's come in, he's looked good. And he's looked very comfortable in the ball, very capable in that left back position. So,
yep. I also wouldn't be surprised to see Pierre De Silva get a start. Again, he's still working his way back from injury, and I think Matt is really smart about preserving players. Yeah. Maybe that's why Aiden and Cello weren't in, that maybe they're not serious, but he was just being cautious. I think Pierre De Silva proved himself, he could slot in on the wing for Gebhardt, who's been a little bit quiet lately, or if Cello and or Aiden are still out, to play in the 6 or the 8, I think it would be good. But again, you don't want to start him if he's not ready. So we will see. We will see, and we will push, and we will be here. And just like the pink men, we will not quit.
The pink men, the men in pink will not quit. I love it.
I have to, speaking of that, we have to give Mark Schroenster a shout out. That was a great call. And that was the second game of the night. To have this game be your second game of the night, he did the Greenville home game before that. Good on you, Mark Schroenster.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great job. Another great job.
Yeah. So, Grant, again, thanks for being with us as always.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate your insight. And Talk of Flock is a production of the Soto Soccer Network, produced by Jeremy Rushing, hosted by me, Rob Chappell, and with me tonight again, Grant Peters. Have a great week. We'll see you Saturday.